and some pals, and there's also therapy too.
Okay, awesome. All right, here we go. Woman of the Year. First and foremost, welcome. And also welcome to Chris Carr. Thank you for coming back. So excited.
Thank you for having me back. I love this.
Oh my God. We did mention you in Galentine's because I know you're supposed to be there, but you were really sick, as was everyone at that time of year. Literally everyone. But now I'm glad that you're recovered.
Me too. I did like 4 COVID tests too. I was just so paranoid. Mm-hmm. Like, I have to have it. I feel so gross. Cause now, you know, if you sneeze or cough, you're like, did I sleep with my mouth open or did I sleep?
Yeah, literally. And then all the tests were running out and it was just a mess, a nightmare. But well, I say was as if it has ended, but let's just move on. Anyway. All right. So season 2, episode 17, Woman of the Year. This was written by Norm Hiscock and directed by Jason Woliner. Norm, we've seen before. He's one of the people actually in, well, first of all, we've seen his writing before, but he is also, friendly reminder, in the episode of Boys Club where she's standing in front of the black and white pictures. He is one of the council members that is like always following her chest. They put that, like they put his picture as that. So a little homage to him.
I like that he gets to be the creepy guy.
Right, exactly. It's so funny. But he's in that kind of circle of comedy that they all are in. And by they, I just mean like Mike Schur, Greg Daniels, the writers and producers and stuff, like King of the Hill, SNL, Brooklyn Nine-Nine, Trailer Park Boys, like kind of all in that same little thing. But again, he wrote Rock Show, Pawnee Zoo. He also wrote one of the Ron and Tammys, Soda Tax, Flu Season. I mean, his track record is like outstanding. So... Yes. Chef's kiss indeed. So that's Norm. And then we've got this directed by Jason Woliner, who we've seen before from Beauty Pageant, which LOL, love that one. And Freddy Spaghetti, which we haven't gotten to yet, but can't wait for that. But he also directed, which I didn't, maybe I said this in the last one. I don't remember if I did, but he directed Borat's subsequent movie film, which was the second one.
I wrote that down specifically because I saw it and I was like, how did I not catch that before?
I know. I don't know why. I don't know. But yeah, he did that. And then he's also directed a lot of Last Man on Earth, which is that Will Forte show, which is amazing and ahead of its time. and then also he directed one of Aziz Ansari's specials. So he is very familiar with the comedy world. And we've just got like a dream team, I feel. And we'll hear, this one had commentary, by the way, you guys. So we've got some commentary notes, which is so exciting. So we'll hear some more things about like little techniques and things that he did. But yeah, so those are our crew team right now. And I will pass it over to you, Maddie, for a summary.
Yes, I have to make a comment, though, because yes, the Borat thing. So there's this clip, I don't know if you've seen it, where it's Sacha Baron Cohen. I don't think he's dressed up as Borat. Maybe he is. But he's in a small town, and he is trying to explain to the town that they're going to put a mosque. Have you seen this clip? Oh, my gosh. You should look it up, because it was actually filmed in Kingman, Arizona, which I have to drive through to get to Vegas. It's so embarrassing to live in this state when you watch that video. It's like everybody's like a mosque, like it's bad. Anyway,
is it a part of the movie or is it just a random clip?
I honestly don't think so. I think he literally just went on a tour around states and did this to see what reactions would be. I've only ever seen this one clip, but it's only 6 minutes. But anyway, I just had to put that out there because I thought it was funny but also sad.
Yeah, I'll look it up. And then if it's appropriate, I'll put it in the show notes.
Okay. Yeah, honestly, I couldn't tell you whether or not it's appropriate enough for show notes.
Okay, well, I don't know who actually reads show notes anyway, so it's fine.
Okay, so this week's summary, I made it short and sweet because we got 3 different storylines kind of going on, and I thought it's kind of straight and to the point. There's just a lot of sub stuff going on. So in this episode, we have Leslie is upset when Ron gets the coveted Dorothy Everton Smythe Award from the IOW. Tom is inquiring with people around the office to help him invest in the Snake Hole Lounge. And Andrea tries to find an apartment with April. Not together, yay, but they help. April's helping Andy. Sorry, I just realized how confusing that could be.
No. We get it. Oh my gosh. Andy looking for an apartment is so dumb. It's the best.
I have to just say, I'm not going to lie. I've definitely done what he did and go into the bathroom and sing and see what the acoustics are.
Oh, every musician / like person in general, I feel. And by person in general, I mean like creative person. Let's say that.
Yes.
Has done that. It is what it is.
It is.
But yeah, so this cold open starts with the two coaches of the Little League soccer teams. Hilarious. And the girls team doesn't have a field. And for those of you who are super crazy, like, well, not crazy, but like, you know, super into improv communities and things like that. This head coach, one of them anyway, is played by Ian Roberts, which is one of the founding members of the Upright Citizens Brigade, which is hilarious. Yeah. So fun. And I said, I can't remember when I said this, but I said this on the podcast that I was like rereading Yes, Please, Amy Poehler's book. And I just like refreshed myself on who was in UCB, like the original. And all of them have been in the show. And I said I wasn't going to say what parts they played until they got here. But fun reminder, he also was in the pilot episode. If you guys remember when they're in the elementary school, when Anne first brings up her park moment, or her pit moment, rather. He's the one that's like, I don't want my kids walking around in the park with like, fuck this and fuck that written everywhere. And like, they bleep him like 8,000 times. And so he was in that, but now he comes back as a Little League coach. And so that is amazing. And the thing that I can't believe is that he was Sparky Pilastri in Bring It On, the Jazz Fingers guy.
Uh-uh. Did not pull that out.
He looks so fucking different. I was like, this is not real. That's just his doppelganger. It's not even a thing. Whatever.
He just looks,
you guys,
like,
I will post the picture. That's him. That is him. He's like much more fit and like much more like jazz hands. Like, I'm a gymnast kind of guy, dude. But that is him.
That's wild. Because I love him. I love him so much. When he pops up and things, I get so excited.
Same.
What?
I know. I know. It's actually insanity. It blows my mind every time. But yeah, the Spirit Fingers guy. I said jazz hands, but Spirit Fingers is what I meant. So yeah. But anyway, it's just like, I couldn't handle that. I was like looking at pictures. I'm not even gonna tell you how long I spent staring at this screen. Like, that can't be right. But that was him. And then the lady coach is played by Andrea Hutchman. She's been a guest star in a couple things, but I couldn't find a ton of stuff for her past 2018. So I don't know if she has done things recently, or if perhaps COVID stopped stuff, or maybe she's been in commercials that we just don't know, because that's not listed on IMDb. So there's that. But great job to her. And I also love that, you know, the lady coach is coaching the boys team and the dude coach is coaching the girls team. And like, there's this whole sexism, you know, layer in there. It's really hilarious to me.
Which I wanted to get your guys' opinion on that. Like, do you think Leslie's being sexist or no when she makes that insinuation?
I think it's just drilled into every person that, like, it's just a default. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. You're just like assuming that since it's a man and it's a woman, like, that they're probably coaching the girls and he's probably coaching the guys, you know?
It's just, I think it's, it. I mean, it is sexist, but it's internalized misogyny, right?
Exactly.
It's the same thing as when you say something like, well, I was going to my doctor and someone says, what did he tell you?
Mm-hmm.
She told me.
Right.
And it's just that snap thing that people do where they've just gendered people because of how we've all been raised. And it's just mm-hmm. a construct. So why do we get so hung up on it anyway?
Yeah. Yeah, just because I almost got offended for Leslie when she was called sexist in that moment. It's like, that's just how things have been. So that's how mm-hmm. we think. And I can see it being a moment of like, okay, I need to think outside of this now. But like, at the same time, it's like, that's kind of what we've been drilled into us. And now that I'm thinking about it, though, the crappy thing is I've seen a lot of guys coaching girls teams, but I've mm-hmm. not seen a lot of girls coaching guys teams. So mm-hmm. I think that's what throws it off.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. Well, and this reminds me, and this is a little bit of a random thing, but kind of in the same regards, is that I was in like this book club, but it was for plays once. And we were all kind of like, not freaked out, but just a little bit like, shocked, I guess, or taken aback that one of the playwrights had written it as a dialogue that the that she, like, she was doing a monologue and she was saying that she was Black, and like, but we hadn't heard that she was Black until that very moment. And some people were like, why does he feel like they needed to say that she was Black? Like, that's so dumb, blah, blah, blah. And we were just like, but sometimes nowadays we're so defaulted again to think that everybody is just white until you say it. And especially playwrights and like TV shows and stuff, if the playwright or the producer or whoever, the casting director, does not explicitly say you have to be black, then they're not going to cast a black person a lot of the times. Like, I'm just going to be super honest, you know? So it was just like kind of reckoning with your initial reaction slash your, you know, internal misogyny or racism. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, it's a good point.
I got way deeper in that cold open than we intended.
I know. Well, but that's the thing is I have a problem with this scene every time it opens because I sit there and I'm like, but that's the same thing I would do. Mm-hmm. So then I get like internal on myself and I'm like, am I an awful person? Like, what's happening?
I think that's what's so profound about this comedy in particular. 12 years later,
yeah,
people are going, oh, shit, am I doing that? Because of all things you could call Leslie Knope, you would never call her sexist.
Right.
And yet this moment just challenges that and also shows like this is why feminism has to be intersectional. This is why you do have to like readdress your thought processes and your own internalized like belief structures.
Mm-hmm.
Because if someone like Leslie can slip up like that, obviously all of us can.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's not intentional. You know, it's not intentional to offend anybody at all.
Mm-hmm. But now that's the thing is that it doesn't matter what your intention is anymore. It's just like, are you fixing it or are you not? You know what I mean?
Yeah, so, but I think there's education around that. There needs to be more education around that too. Like, I feel like we have a lot of opportunities where we're unintentionally saying something and then people immediately become defensive and really upset about it. Whereas I feel like, I know it's hard if you don't know the person, but I think there's a lot of opportunity in those situations to be like, hey, actually, I find that offensive because, and then somebody's learning from it. Now, I know not everybody out there is willing to learn and change, but, you know, I think
it's a good way to start.
Yeah. And I think we lose opportunities like that sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, totally. But, and these kids are hilarious. I love that. You're a girl, right?
Yeah,
she mistakes them. It's so awful. So the little kid boy's name, or I don't know what they identify as now, but the one who is playing or portrayed as a boy is named William Pollack, and the girl's name is Serena Westfall. They were great. They really made me laugh because she was just like, yeah, you're a girl, right?
Yeah, her.
Oh my God, so funny. Well, now I'm in the conference room. Is there anything else to say about the soccer teams before we move on?
I had two more quick things because I got judgy because of my job. Because Leslie comes up and she's like, you're supposed to be coaches and role models. And they're like fighting and they're, you know, he takes the ball and punts it away, you know. Like, I see so many parents that do this stuff and then they're like, I don't know why my kid does this. I'm like, I do. I'd like you to take a look at what you do in front of them, please, real quick.
Yeah.
No, but that's kind of just something
that's true.
Yeah. It's, I just caught it and I was like, but you guys are acting like children. So why do you expect them to act any differently?
A brilliant comedy tool for both of these stories or subtexts that we're talking about.
Yeah. No, I love it. And just the other thing I thought was like, there's such an easy solution to this. It's like all you had to do was split the field in half and one team could use one half and one team could use the other. But anyway.
Yeah, I agree with that totally. Especially for practice. I mean,
yeah.
But I understand why they or just like be cool and be like, you take it now, I'll take it tomorrow. Or whatever the fuck. You know what I mean? Like, how long does your practices last? You need it all day?
Yeah. Well, they're not, that's the thing is like the only reason I would think they couldn't be there at the same time is because they're playing each other and they don't want to see stuff. But it's the girls' team and the boys' team. It's not two co-ed teams, right? So they're not going to be playing each other.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. Anyway, now I'm at the office. I'm done.
Okay,
rant over.
No, you're good. That's what you're here for. Maybe they are playing each other. Who's to say? No, I'm just kidding. I don't know. Now all bets are off, okay? But anyway, so Donna comes in carrying the mail and throws it down, splattering Jerry's soup everywhere, but somehow it's still Jerry's fault. Oh, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I think this is the only relationship besides Ben and Jerry's that actually like blossoms and Donna has like emotions for Jerry at some point.
Oh, yeah. Totally. So. I think a lot of people come around to Jerry after a while. But Donna, for
sure.
She's
not one of the first ones. How can you not fall in love with Jerry?
I love him so much.
I do have to say his food looks so good. I was staring at it and I was like, that's a lot for lunch and I want it.
Christy Brinkley is hooking him up.
Yes.
Literally.
Taking care of her man.
Apparently, according to the commentary, they had to do this take multiple times to get the soup splatter correct slash, you know, good enough for it to make sense and be funny.
Yeah.
Which it makes me laugh to think about, you know, someone off to the side, like cleaning it up every time.
That was immediately my thought. What poor soul had to clean up in between takes?
Oh, yikes. But anyway, so Leslie sees this envelope from the IOW and is like, oh my God, nobody freak out. That's a fight stance.
Where are my ladies at?
Where are my ladies at? And she thinks she's going to be Woman of the Year. By the way, IOW is the Indiana Organization of Women. And I did look it up a couple of things. But before I say what I looked up, I'll say that Leslie has been a dues-paying member since she was 9. LOL. Mm-hmm. I think that is hilarious and such a good little character development moment. But and then this talking head also, they said this in the commentary, but I noticed it definitely as well, that in her talking head, when she's saying she's been a dues member, she has all those awards behind her that were not there before. Mm. So this is kind of just illustrating where and when she's received all these awards that she's speaking of, which is hilarious. And I do think that this name is super long for the award, the Dorothy Everton Smythe Female Empowerment Award. I'm like, what? But I do love it and it's great.
Yes.
And anyway, so I did look it up and there is an IOW like in real life, but there's a few women's organizations in Indiana. One is the ICW, which I don't know if they looked this up at all or if this was it. You know, any sort of research on their end. But ICW is the Indiana Commission for Women. And then there's the Indiana Now, which is the National Organization for Women. And that one's nationwide. So you can definitely go online and just Google National Organization for Women and find the chapter in your area if you are so interested in doing that. It's now.org, by the way. So I'll post that in the show notes. There's tons of ways that you can like look up, you know, how to help women and legislation and things like that. So super important. But yeah, so I will definitely post that for you guys. But also, this is her destiny and her dream, mm-hmm. is what she says. It's so funny. I love it. And then this is where she's like holding April and Donna's hands.
Yes. I wanted to point out the Dorothy Everton. It gets mentioned later in the episode, but the Dorothy mm-hmm. Everton Smythe Award is for this woman who was the first woman to wear pants on a Sunday. And she yes. went to prison for 4 years for it.
Mm-hmm.
Rationality. Yeah. Logic.
Oh my God. Have you seen those TikToks going around that say, like, it's a serious man, and it's mostly being used as a sound to mock this man, but he's saying, like, since women have been able to wear pants, they haven't been as modest. And it's just like, what the fuck? Can you believe, like, I can believe it because humans are awful,
yeah.
But I'm just like, this is ridiculous. So, and it also, going back to the show, I suppose, definitely starts that whole thing of like the weird laws in Pawnee that are still yeah. outdated.
Yeah, that just nobody follows, but they're still written.
Yeah, like the black people can't walk on sidewalks, as mm-hmm. Donna says.
Yep. Yeah, you need like your man's permission to rent a. Some I don't even remember what it was, yeah. but like you
which
need
that
your
one's not even
permission.
That far off. Like that one was like absolutely real all the time since like I don't know what was it like 1920 when we got the right to vote or whatever the fuck. We couldn't get credit cards even after yeah. that.
Well, yeah, a whole bunch of marriage laws still are like you are legally your husband's property. Mm-hmm. You're not. You don't own him, but he mm-hmm. definitely owns you. So just live accordingly.
Yeah.
Anger.
Get ready, Maddie. I'm so proud of you. I'm so excited. Legal property, legal time.
No, the only reason that, like, the one of the biggest reasons I can make it through this is because he's a bigger feminist than I am. So I know that he look at himself more as property than me.
Perfect. That's what we want.
Yeah.
Take her name, Ivan.
He talked about it.
Oh, yes. I love that.
Yeah. So we'll see what happens. We might hyphenate. We don't know yet.
Mm-hmm. I have a friend of mine that actually the guy who does all my videos, shout out to Ian, he changed, like him and his wife combined their last names and they both changed their names.
That's
like
cool.
Not hyphenated, but like
they
changed
merged it.
Yeah, like a celebrity name. celebrity couple cool. name kind of. Yeah.
Awesome.
But anyway, so then we learn that Ron got this award and everyone's like, what the F? And everyone's joking around. But I was definitely with Leslie. I was so frustrated and annoyed that everybody was laughing about it, especially mm-hmm. when Ron has this talking head of like, awards are stupid, but I'm going to tease her about it because this is a lousy women's organization. Rah, rah, rah. And I was like, I know this is a joke, but I'm infuriated and it's fine.
And it's fine.
Yeah, they were gonna talk or cut that talking head also about him like joking her, like teasing her about it. But thank God they didn't, because they were saying it helps the audience kind of understand what's going on. And I, for sure, if I didn't have that talking head, I would be livid and I would not. I would have like read the whole time, like if I wasn't in on the joke, you know what I mean? And Nick Offerman was quoted as saying that this feels like he was torturing one of his sisters. Like, he was kind of looking at Leslie as his sister in real life, kind of, which I think is so funny.
Yeah. Well, and I think it's respectable that he's like, listen, I don't deserve this award. She deserves this award. Mm-hmm. But like, I'm going to take this opportunity for her to not take things so seriously. Mm-hmm. You know, because he's like, he's his whole thing. I don't know if it's so much towards this specific award, but overall, he's just like, awards are dumb.
Yeah.
Like so why do we care so much about it? But
yeah. It's a fun example, too, of how Ron still falls into being her mentor. Mm-hmm. Willingly or not, he still has these moments of like giving her guidance. It's mm-hmm. just not the way that she wants it or thinks that she should be mentored.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's
if he even sees it that way.
Yeah.
Yeah, probably not. I think he's just doing what he thinks is fun.
Yeah.
And just like fucking with her. But yeah, you're right. That's a great point. So now I'm at the snake hole lounge if everyone else is there.
Yes.
Good? Okay. Awesome. So Tom is talking to Freddie, saying his liquor license got. And he's like, what? Also, this is temporary approval is what he said. So like, I guess it's a new lounge, right? I guess at this point.
I'm assuming it's new. We haven't been there yet, right?
Mm-mm.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't think so. Haven't we talked about it?
I think he's mentioned it.
I think so too.
But I don't know how you've been there if you haven't had alcohol. But the whole alcohol, the whole liquor license thing, talking about it from a restaurant point of view, it took a long ass time, takes a lot of money, and it's like the government is so slow in it.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I didn't know they did temporary ones, but it would make sense like for a bar that's like, hey, this is my only form of revenue. You need to give me something until I get the official one.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
makes
a lot of sense. I don't know. Yeah, I'm going to have to like fact check that because I could have sworn we've talked about it before, and but I don't remember when we talked about it. So I'll have to fact check it. I should have looked at that. But
I'm trying to like think through all the times that this is my problem because I've been watching the episodes as we go. Obviously, but then I'm also watching on because then I do the notes for the episode and I'm like, I'll watch another one. Mm-hmm. I'll watch another one. And then I get two seasons down the road and then we're talking again and I'm like, wait, I just watched an episode where we were there, but I don't remember when it was. Mm-hmm.
Well, because we talked about liquor licenses already, but I can't remember mm-hmm. like why we talked about that. I don't know if it was like for the rock show. No, because that was already a bar. So I'll have mm-hmm. to go back and figure it out because maybe there was another like place that needed a liquor license or something like this. But anyway, regardless, Aziz was on tour, fun fact. And so that's why he couldn't be present for the commentary. But it was a big moment, says Mike Schur, because like for his character anyway, because of him being the entrepreneur and wanting to start his own business. But also like this is his kind of step into like, you know, doing the investing thing and all that kind of situation, which is really cool. And then Freddie, this is our first time for sure of Freddie, I think I want to say. And this is played by Andy Milder, who you guys has played in Weeds before. If any of you have watched Weeds, he is in Weeds. And he's also been in Apollo 13, Armageddon, Transformers, which is amazing. Austin and Ally, which is that Disney show. Also, he's in this show called Good Morning Agrestic, I want to say, if that's the correct pronunciation. And it is kind of a spinoff thing because I didn't realize this until I was looking at the IMDb of like the cast, and it's like all those people were in Weeds. What is this? And yeah, it's like a spinoff thing of Weeds where all the cast members have a talk show.
Oh, interesting.
I know it's so cool, right? And Becky Thayer, who plays Sue Salad's lady, is also in it. Oh. Which is so wild. What a time.
That's interesting.
Circle moment. And I did, I think, I don't know for sure, I followed a Becky Thayer, and I'm pretty positive it's the same one, but she doesn't have any of her own pictures on there. It's like all about shows and stuff and whatever, but I think it's her. I'm going to message her and see what happens when Sue Salads comes back. But anyways, he comes back in a few episodes reviving this role. But fun, exciting news, he messaged me and we have a little audio clip from Freddie himself.
Yay!
Hey, Holly, this is Andy Milder. I am very sorry for cutting it so close and getting this to you so late. But I did want to get it to you, so here we go. I auditioned for Parks for the casting director, Dorian Frankel, who is one of my favorite casting directors out there. She's awesome. She's actually a very funny improviser herself, so I'm surprised she didn't have a major role in the show, to be honest with you. But it was a very simple audition. They were looking for this guy to be the head of the snake hole, and I just remember thinking he was just... I remember buttoning my shirt a little too low, or unbuttoning my shirt a little too low, I should say. And I just remember... I remember going in there and there were a few people in there who I knew. And, you know, it was very much like a lot of auditions. Weeds had just, I think it was still on the air, or maybe it had just gotten over with. Anyway, so I was still kind of in the popular culture more than I am now. But so I think that probably was to my advantage. But it was a lot of fun, the audition. I mean, I enjoy auditioning. I'm one of those crazy actors who actually likes to audition. So, that's it. I mean, it was very much like a normal audition. There you go. I do have a lot of memories of that day working. Aziz and I did not talk a ton because he was just, I mean, Aziz is a busy dude. And even then he was working on a bunch of projects. So he was on his phone a lot and doing that sort of thing. I do remember on at least a couple of occasions, or one occasion in particular, Amy Poehler. We all got onto a bus to go to the snake hole, and Amy Poehler got on the bus, and she and I had not said a word to each other. We hadn't even met in the previous episode that I was in because she wasn't in that scene, and she got on the bus and saw me and went, "Andy, so glad to have you here." And I was like, "That is a class act." She didn't really know me, but she knew who I was. And that was just, I just thought, wow, you know, what a pleasure it must be to be on this show on a regular basis. And really, I've only heard great things from other people I know who have been on the show. So it just seems to fit. Everyone was just cool. And what was fun is they'd do it and you'd do a take and then they'd say, all right, well, let's just do one, you know, for fun and do what you want. And, you know, we'd improv a little bit. It was a lot of fun. We really had a good time doing it. And where was it filmed, you ask? I don't really remember. It was not on a lot. We were definitely on a location. But for the life of me, I can't tell you where that location was. I remember there being an alleyway that we had to walk through to get there. So it kind of fits for the snake hole. But it was a cool little space. And I wish I could remember. It was in Hollywood somewhere. But I can't tell you where. So sorry about that. And then... It was just a lot of fun. We had a really good time filming it. I did, certainly. I remember the space, and I remember talking to the director and saying, hey, let's try this, and let's try that. And everyone was just really, really cool. So I know that's very vague and very generic, but it's also very true. It was a lot of fun to work on, and I understand why people love the show so much, because not only was it a funny show, it was clearly a great place to be. Thanks, Holly. I hope this answers all your questions. All right. Andy Milder signing out. Bye.
Yay!
That was cute.
What a sweetie.
What a sweetie indeed.
Oh, my God.
Okay. I couldn't help myself.
Same.
Telethon. That's what he was in. because remember Aziz Ansari, Tom, is helping. Dead Lev Shrimp, and he's escorting him. So that's where we've seen Freddie, and that's where we've seen Snake Hole Lounge before. On Telethon.
Telethon is like the 22nd episode, though, of the season. It's almost the last one.
Oh, yeah.
Because that's where Anne and Mark break up.
Yeah.
Weird. Well, then what else was he in? He said previous episode. I'm so confused.
I've literally been sitting here looking through.
Maybe he got cut. Maybe he got cut.
Maybe he did. Because I'm looking through the list and I can't find the next episode that the previous episode.
I totally
episode
thought we did telethon before because we've talked to so many guests about it.
Yeah, because we talked to Perd about it and we talked to Linda about it.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'm just that'll be our fact check for next time. Whatever. Anyway, yes, thank you to Indy Milder.
There are two big things that stand out there too. Is
yes.
One, I made a face during it. No actor likes auditioning. So Andy is such an outlier. We all hate auditioning. It's like a weird, you go on all these weird first dates that never go anywhere. It's a job interview every day that you're just like, oh God, I'm a piece of shit.
Why have I chosen this?
Yeah. And even when you have fun at them, even when you're like, nailed it. What a fun day. Set it, forget it. You're still like, why am I in this job? My parents are right. I should have gone to culinary school. It's always that uphill battle. And then, like, I just love what he said about Amy, too, because that's what you want from number one on the call sheet. You mm-hmm. want your person, you know, your lead to be that leader and that accommodating presence. And
yeah,
I love when we hear stories that reinforce what a beautiful human being she is.
Right. Absolutely. And we hear it from everyone. Like everyone yeah. says that she was so welcoming. She was such a great person to have mm-hmm. at the helm. Like we literally hear it from every guest. So it's awesome.
Yeah. She's a consistent lady, that one. Mm-hmm. And it's really funny. I told him as well. It's funny that he mentioned the van because one of the guests, the Jesus guy, who was like, if God or if Jesus made sugar or whatever, why does it taste so? Or if it's
yeah.
good, what's the line?
Oh, gosh.
If it's so says, good, why is it so
if
bad?
It's so bad
or whatever
for you.
The fuck?
Why did Jesus make it taste so good?
Yes, thank you. Like something's going on. But anyway, he mentioned riding in the van as well. And he said that it was Amy Poehler, Nick Offerman, and I think Rashida and maybe one other person. And how it was like basically this like clown car of people. And I think Kevin Simons or Dex Hart, as you guys know him, also mentioned that it's just funny to hear that that's like one of the things that stands out, like riding in the van with them and like meeting them. You know, I guess it's just like because that's the most like mundane slash, you know, normal part of like a job. You're like heading to set. You know what I mean? And like to see them outside of character and just being treated so nicely as an outsider or like not outsider, but, you know, guest star, day player, whatever. It's so beautiful.
The van is the great equalizer.
Yeah. You know,
like you're all the same when you're in the van.
Yeah,
I was working
true.
On Big Little Liars or Big Little Lies.
Yeah.
And gosh, I'm blanking out on her name, but she was Pam's friend at like best friend at her wedding who ended up like hooking up with Dwight.
Yeah, I remember.
She's in the van and I was talking to one other girl because we're talking about Disney and she just turns around and was like, did you work at Disney? Can you tell me all about it?
Oh and my God. Like,
yeah, cool. Let's do
Wait,
that.
Big Little Lies, the Reese Witherspoon one?
Yeah.
What did you do on there?
I was a Piloxer on it. I was cut. It was fine.
No.
That's the story of my life. Chris Carr ends up on the cutting room floor. But it was really fun and I got paid to work out.
Yeah.
What was awesome is later on when I was on, so I did that show and Adam Scott was like on set that day too. I was still working at Healthy Spot at that time as a brand ambassador.
Okay.
So I had a weird job where I gave out free samples of kibble and alcohol where I'd be like, come to Healthy Spot, have a margarita with me and get a treat for your dog.
What?
And Adam Scott came in to get stuff. And there was a really weird moment of him looking at me like, why do I know you? And me being like, margarita or kibble?
That's great.
Yeah, everyone is the same in the van.
Oh my, that's so true. What a great point. Did you like end up talking to him at all besides that?
No, I was mortified.
Okay.
Absolutely
mortified. I was in that show and I got cut. Thank you so much. Goodbye.
I got cut and now you're seeing me here. Giving out shots of tequila in a pet store. What is my life?
That sounds like classic Hollywood, homie. Oh my God. Yeah, well, look, if we ever do a Big Little Lies or Big Little Liar, whatever the fuck, rewatch show, you know that I will interview you and post you and tag you, because I do all the cut people. I give them their due diligence.
I love that.
Which we will get to also. Side note, I have a little thing later on about cut people.
All right.
Ooh. Okay. But anyways, thank you to Andy for that. And please explain if you're listening to this, or maybe I'll message him and be like, what episode were you in? I'll ask him. How about that? I'll ask him. Okay, great. Moving on. My brain like is so stuck on it.
Tom's Bistro is mentioned. We have a little nugget that comes back.
This is what I was talking about with Burley last week when I was like, I don't understand these writers and how they just like they tie up every loose end that they possibly could get their hands on. And a part of me wonders, like I said, if that's kind of a writer's trick where they like just go through old shit that they used to have on their note cards and be like, oh, we haven't explored or fleshed out that thing yet. I don't know. I would love to know if Norm Hiscock like wrote that line specifically or how that happened. But that is so cool to see that that comes back later.
Yeah, no, I love it. And I was listening to the Burley episode, and I remember when we were interviewing him, when we were talking about that, I had a thought in my head. And then when we got towards the end, I was like, I had something, and I just don't think it's there anymore. And I was listening in the car, and I started yelling it. I was like, the triplets, because that also is like mentioned in the beginning of season two.
You got a great oven.
Yeah. Could fit
you
triplets
could have triplets
in there.
Right off the bat.
Yeah. So I was like, oh, I forgot. Like, that's what I had forgotten to say in the Burley episode, but like that's another nugget that they plugged pretty early on.
Yeah. I notice that stuff all the time, especially if you watch the show multiple times. It's so easy to do.
Yeah.
Some of the other things that he wants to open or names of clubs are Club-a-Dub-Dub, Club Marine.
Submarine.
And then
vibe.
Bistro is classy as shit is why he wants to call himself Bistro. Agreed, sir. Agreed. Especially when it's brick, like the way that it does end up being. And then Freddie asks if he wants to be a part owner for $10,000. Yikes. That's a lot of money. Makes sense, but because this reminds me of when I tried to look into franchising a yogurt land here.
Oh, you did. You so did.
Oh, my God. You'd be such a cute little yogurt land owner.
Oh, my God. They don't have any. They have one Froyo place here, and it's like 30 minutes away, and it doesn't have Reese's peanut butter cups, and it really drives me up a fucking wall. But I have made the trip. I'll make the commute, even though, whatever, it's not yogurt land.
You can swing a cat and hit a yogurt land here.
That is what I'm saying. Even though I would never swing a cat, but you know what I mean? No, but seriously, I looked into that and then I immediately blocked the number out of my head because I was like, that's not going to happen. Thanks so much. Bye.
Yeah. It's not cheap. And I think he knows how much Tom wants to be involved and that he's kind of milking him into it. Because, I don't think Tom should be spending his money this way, but that's just me.
Right.
But we also get to see this really cool side of Tom that I don't really think we've really seen yet, is that he does have determination and he does have hard work when it's something he wants to do, right? Because we see so many episodes of him like being like, why are you here? Like, you don't like this, obviously. And then he very easily explains that public service is to help him. And that this is why he's there. So, I mean, but we finally get to see like, okay, you have some motivation here. You have some potential. So
yeah,
I think that's a redeeming quality in him.
Oh, for sure. It's one of the more interesting bits of character development we see. Because season two, I feel, really is when we're like, oh, look at these like three-dimensional individuals coming together.
Yeah. Yeah. And like what they do outside of work and all that stuff, for sure.
Yeah.
So now we're at where Leslie and Mark are talking about, they're like having some foods, and Leslie's attitude in this dialogue is so funny to me. I love her. I almost recorded it, but I was like, they'll get it. That I love the way she's like, it's my award. It's mine. She like growls it. It's mine. That's totally, that's totally something I would do.
And she's so mad.
Totally like, what's that?
She's so mad about the Camp Athena thing. Like, why would he do that? And Mark's like, he wouldn't. He's like, I don't know what to do here.
I know. Well, and that's something that they mentioned in the commentary as well, that like Leslie always went to Mark when she knew she was maybe doing something or going about something maybe the wrong way, like especially about the pit and things like that. And they were friends, you know, like she liked his advice, even though she's like, at first she was kind of obsessed with him and was like, whatever, we slept together, You know what I mean? Like, now I feel like she kind of sees him as, you know, someone to bounce ideas off of, which I think is really nice and a cool reminder.
Yeah. And the fact that she keeps going back to him, even though she doesn't typically like what he says.
Absolutely. And I think that's what she needs. She kind of like under the surface, like knows that she needs to hear those things. But all of her ideas are hilarious. Write an email to Barack Obama, lock herself in her office and scream until she loses her voice. This reminds me of that deleted scene during Galentine's Day where she has to teaching herself doing that audiobook tape or whatever the hell on like how to calm down and rationalize every decision and think about the possible outcomes and downfalls. Mm-hmm. But Mark is so funny because he just suggests that she talk to Ron like a normal human being, but it's hard, right? Like every time that you know what the like answer is or you know what the solution is, just talk to that person that you're having some issues with. Like that's not the first guess that we always go to. Then Amy Poehler also made a great point that they always had Leslie eating a salad, but she never actually eats it. She always has it to like kind of feel healthy, but she's always just eating cookies instead.
I love it.
Same girl.
Same. Absolutely. And then Anne calls Mark and Leslie grabs the phone and says, there's so much I need to tell you. And it's I love this part. I don't know why, man. Like maybe I'm alone in this, but I love Mark in this last little moment. And in I love his little Eeyore moments where he's like, hey, Anne, Leslie would like to talk to you for a moment. Is that all right? Good. He's like talking to himself. I just love it. I think it's so funny.
Oh, I hardcore do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's very that passive aggressive situation as well, where you're just like, I will not stand up. I will just kind of let it slide and we'll see if that happens later.
I don't think Brandanowitz gets his comeuppance. You know, I don't think he gets his due.
I don't either.
He has really great moments. And I do think a lot of it just came down to like, what are we doing with this character? Mm-hmm. But man, he really commits to just being that straight guy on the show and does such a job.
Mm-hmm. I know. Agreed. And I know a lot of people don't like him. Like his character is just like annoying to him. There is that. But I like him. I don't care. You can come at me.
I like him too. I really like him. And I mean, partially it makes sense to me like how they wrote him out, right? Was the whole Anne thing. I don't think he and Anne are meant to be together. That's the vibe I get. They don't have the chemistry. But like, I think, and maybe it would have been hard to keep him in. Mm-hmm. With her there, but I really liked him, and I thought there were many episodes that follow that he could have been a cool character to have in there.
Side note, I love / am interested that Anne isn't actually in this episode, but they bring her up anyway. You know what I mean? I really like how they did that. I know that that's like a old text book moment, but I thought it was cool.
Whereas I'm interested to know, like, was she filming something? Because in the next episode, the only time she's really there is to give April instructions on how to take care of her house while she's gone. And then she's gone for the episode again.
Oh, yeah. Hmm.
So, which means she probably only had to be there for a couple hours to get that scene or two scenes down or whatever.
Right. Yeah. So. I didn't look at the timeline, so I'm not sure. Maybe she was. Okay, so we're now at John Ralphio. Does anyone else have anything else to say before we get to her?
I love him so much, and I love him. I love him.
The internet's boyfriend, Ben Schwartz. He's wonderful and should be protected at all costs. Side quest too. Are you guys watching After Party?
I haven't watched it yet, but I know I need to.
I'm so upset that it dropped in January, because if this had come out like earlier in 2021, like Ben Schwartz would be nominated for an Emmy.
Oh, man.
He's so good on the show, y'all. It's so fun. It's so great. And I just love seeing him like really coming up in the world. I love that he's being more and more like prominently featured in things. He's so incredible.
He really is. He's a gem, a true treat. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's nuts.
Yeah, I agree.
Moment of silence for the brilliance of Ben Schwartz. So good. So you know how they do that like shoulders brushing off thing? So there was a ton of alts of that, which I don't know if they come up with that on their own or what it was, but it was perfect. I do love his slang though. What a do, nephew. I'm going to start saying that. I used to say what a do all the time in college, and Sean was really mad at me when I stopped saying it. Like I came back from like summer or maybe studying abroad, and he was like, you don't say what a do anymore. So I'll start it again. But anyways, Tom says that he shouldn't, that John Ralphio should invest in this club. And John Ralphio's like, that's great because my grandfather died. And so now he's flush with cash.
Flush with cash.
Okay. This is the life-changing, you guys, because this is the part that I recorded, and this is why I recorded this instead of the other thing, because it comes back that this is another thing that they also brought back, and again, I don't know if this was like a writer thing or what happened, but they bring back that toilet that is literally flush with cash in the party of Tom's warehouse of Entertainment 720. And but anyway, so Ben Schwartz did 800 bajillion thousand versions of this flush with cash. And let me tell you, I am so glad that they chose the one that they did.
It's the best.
But my God, I cannot wait for you to hear this. But I did hear that in interviews, like in the script, it was written that it was like a sing-songy voice, but it wasn't necessarily like how they wanted him to do it. They just kind of let him come up with that. So I just think they let him roll. But let me share this with you because, oh my God.
Snake Hole Lounge is looking for investors.
No way.
Yesterday, if you would have asked me, I would have said no, but thank God my grandfather just passed away, so I am flush with cash. Flush with cash. Flush with cash.
Thought you just said you were flush with cash.
I got 50 thou, but turns out student loans are a B-I-T-C-H. Hit it. Student loans are a beach. Student loans are a bitch. Student loans are a bitch. Student loans are a bitch. Student loans are a bitch.
What about your trust fund?
My parents had it amended. I don't get anything till I'm 50, which is a waste because I may be a billionaire in Costa Rica.
Yep.
Anyway, that was it.
So good. He goes for the falsetto. Like, he's about it. And
that
I love
auto-tune,
it.
I was like, what the fuck? How would they have even made that work? But Mike sure said that was kind of just for fun at the end.
That was amazing. What would John Ralphio have been in college for? Like, what was his major?
Yeah, I'm going to say.
Sorry, that's mean. I know. I knew who I was talking to.
It's the macaroni art of college.
That's amazing.
When you're like, I'm too much of a puss to be an actor and I don't want to develop any skill set. Communications.
Or like some sort of like, he maybe like, I could see him doing like feminine studies or something to just say that he was a feminine study major kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Pottery.
Yeah, pottery. Oh my God. Anyways,
that I don't picture him going to school. I'm glad they took that out because in my vision of John Ralphio, he is not educated past high school.
Right. Which is also hilarious. Like, just the whole, that thing, that all of that is so layered. Like, saying that he's going to be a billionaire by 29 in Costa Rica. Like, they
eating
cut it off.
Eating
dolphins. Right, right. But yet he wants to get it. He probably still wants to get his trust fund by the time he's 50. I'm like, but you're already going to be a billionaire, so you don't need to worry about it. But again, that's what he's saying. Like, he's like, it's a wash anyway, because I'm already going to be a billionaire.
From all the insurance money from his death that he's going to collect.
Right, exactly.
His life insurance.
Oh, God. Anyway, so thank you for going on that joyous ride. But I was like, my jaw was dropped the entire time I was watching that deleted scene. I was like, I cannot. And he does this thing with his hair every time. Like, he flips his bang up and he's like, flush. It's just, it's so, he's so committed. It's wonderful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Freaking jam. Anyways, I think that there's also a lot of information in this little like 5 second interaction with number one. He thinks that 5 G's is enough when Tom clearly said 6 G's. you know what I mean? Like, just dumb. And then I already talked about, you know, him being a billionaire and hanging out with lady singers. Is that what he says?
Yeah. Eating dolphins and hanging out with lady singers.
What a dream. This last little moment of when April says, don't you work at Lady Foot Locker? That was improvised.
Oh,
Aubrey
good
Plaza
for her.
Did that. They swung the camera over to her and then they mentioned that they've kind of brought that back a little bit when the government is shut down and Tom is now working at a Lady Foot Locker or whatever the hell.
So good.
And Amy called her Plazi on the commentary. Like when that little, it was thought that was so precious. It made my heart so sore. Sweet. I know. Like that when they, when that little part came up, she was like, did you improv that, Plazi? I was like, oh. It's so cute. Anyways.
Cute. I like it. We have our good friend Burley.
Yeah, Burley comes back. And he's talking to Andy saying, if you're not going to pay rent, he has to at least clean the dishes. Then there's a bag of smells.
Gotta go. It's gotta go. It was fun at first.
Oh my God.
Which, how? How was it fun at first, Burley? The bag of smells.
I don't know. I guess it was just like, maybe they were drunk. I could see them being drunk and them doing this. And then like they did it soberly because Andy thought it was funny. And then they're just like, no thanks.
And Andy's like, we're about to see some serious results. I'm like, what results are you looking for besides it smelling awful? I don't.
It's
like
science.
Mold. Science. Yeah.
The red radio is back too. It's in the back of the shoe shine stand. I don't know if anyone caught that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's cool.
Tackle Shaft is the new name for Mouse Rat.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep, we're not Mouse Rat anymore. We're Tackle Shaft. Mm-hmm. He's also mad that Burley was mad that he was digging another hole in the backyard. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. And would write the phone messages on the wall.
He's a literal dog come to life.
Yes, mixed with a toddler who draws on the wall.
Yeah, dog toddler.
Yeah. But
April says that she'll help find Andy an apartment. And then there's that sweet moment where Andy says, you're an angel with no wings.
So like a human.
So like a person.
Like a person. Yeah. That's so good.
So funny.
Oh, I love it.
Now I'm at where Leslie's talking to Ron about the IOW award. Does anyone have anything else to say before that?
No, I'm there. And I love this moment because he says, no, you deserve an award. Just not this one because it's mine.
Oh, right. At this point, I was so over Ron. Like, oh my God. And I just, like, I know the season two Ron is, like, we're not fully to where he is, like, giving sound sage advice yet, like, knowingly. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So I need him to meet Diane already. You know what I mean? She brings out a bunch of magazines with only women on the cover for this award, kind of showing him like only women have won this. I don't know why you are getting this. And, you know, if I relate to Leslie, I can understand why, you know, she'd be upset. But then they also said like on the commentary that they definitely had to put a leash on how mean that they were going to make Ron, even though they knew that it was a joke. Like there were definitely things that they cut that like, you know, they were like, we've driven this home enough. We don't need to do it that much. And I think they towed the line brilliantly. I think it was great.
I agree. So I like the way they did it.
And then she has to wish him congratulations. Congratulations, yeah. Ron. Like under her breath.
Yeah. Which there's this redeeming line coming out because like I'm not a huge fan of like participation awards. That's just my personal gist. So like I'm partially on Ron's side here, where it's like we shouldn't be caring this much where it's taking up your entire day and you're not getting any work done because you're so pissed off about this. Mm-hmm. But I'm glad that they have this line for Leslie because it brings it back to where she's not doing this stuff for the awards, because I think sometimes it can come across that way. Mm-hmm. And then she says, well, why would I do it if I'm not going to get an award? She's like, because I love it.
Because I love it.
Yeah, it's that redeeming moment of like a reminder to the audience that yes, she's going overboard with caring about this award, but at the same time, we know she would still do the work regardless of if there was an award or not. Mm-hmm. So I'm glad they put that line in there.
And I love her reading on it as well. Like, she just can't stop saying, I love it. You know what I mean? Like, she can't stop. I feel like she almost wants to stop herself. and she just can't. She just loves it too much.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ugh. Chris, do you have anything left to say about that? I feel like I wasn't letting you speak.
No, that's okay. I'm with you. Okay, great. Those parts too.
Okay, awesome. So Ian Roberts comes back in saying he was promised a place to practice for the girls, and Leslie says, get used to it, it's a man's world.
And I am a man.
Right. And then he says, she says to talk to Ron, which I think is hilarious. And I love how April tries to stop him, but like he's not having it. Yeah. So I really love that. And then we're now at where Tom is passing out VIP cards, which gives you exclusive access to the investment opportunity of a lifetime.
Which, for some reason in my brain, It's like Tom does this a lot where he brings everybody into this conference room. Mm-hmm. But I think it's only twice. I think it's this and then when he does the newlyweds game.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But I'm like, everybody's going to waste, I mean, we know nobody really cares but Leslie, but everybody's going to like waste part of their day to come hear this presentation from Tom.
Yeah. I think it's also really like indicative of how their days go at the parks job. Like they don't have anything else to do anyway, so it's fine.
Yeah. They're like, all right, I guess I'll go to this thing.
Right, exactly. And then we get to Ron doing his official portrait for the IUD program.
The IUD. It's so good.
I laughed out loud. That was so funny. The IUD dinner awards program. And also, as shitty as the props of the pot and the deputy director Barbie are, I really want that Barbie. I would do a little case for it. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Oh, my God.
Have it on display.
Yeah, I mean, have it on display. My mom, I think, I don't know if you guys know this. My mom every year gives me a year Barbie. Like they started the Barbies in the millennium.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And my sister gets a little piece for her village. She has like a Christmas village thing. So that's like what my mom gets her. And then for me, she gets the Barbie. And some of the Barbies are like really worth stuff. But some of them, like the Millennium Barbie especially, is like worth money, I feel. Mm-hmm. But like, I really love them. I think they're really cool. And so I have them on display. So I would definitely have that Barbie.
Yeah, I love it. That's so cool.
Also, fun fact, the guy playing the photographer, which you can't really see, but he is named Steve Zissis. This was on the commentary. He's the local photographer. Apparently, he was also taking pictures at the pit. They mentioned this. So yet again, bringing back the same townspeople, even if they don't have lines. Like, that's incredible.
Wait, as in like Shauna Malway Tweep's photographer or like just there for the pit?
I don't know. I mean, I'll have to go back, but I think he's like the official photographer for like the town. So I think he's with Shauna too.
That's cool.
Yeah.
I like that a lot. I think it really shows how much Ron has invested in this little ploy with mm-hmm. the fact that he's hired this person because mm-hmm. we know that Ron does not waste his money
mm-hmm.
like on things that he doesn't think are worth it.
Yeah.
So to me, I was just like, dude, you went like way beyond what you needed to make this happen. Yeah. She's already pissed off. Like, you did enough.
All right.
Imagine him like going and unburying some of his gold for this. That's like all I could think of was like, you had to go dig for that.
I know.
You literally had to.
And he had to ask if they take gold.
Yeah.
Can I pay you in gold?
Can I pay you in gold?
No regrets. Oh my gosh. Good. So now we're at where Andy and April are talking about different apartments that he can afford. He can only afford $300 a month. That seems absolutely absurd in this day and age to even think about $300 a month.
That'd be nice.
Wow. Even in a small town like that for Indiana, I don't think that's there's possible no anymore.
Yeah. So people say that about Prescott. They're like, oh, it must be nice to. No, it is cheaper to rent an apartment in Phoenix than it is in Prescott.
That's crazy and weird and it's disgusting. Like unnecessary.
That's what it is. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, there's no way. I don't think even in 2009, what do you think?
Like, I think 2009 if you had a roommate, I think maybe not 300, but like 420, something like that in a small town, mm-hmm. that was probably doable.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I've heard of that. Like, and I've definitely heard of people like in my hometown, like when people had roommates in college and stuff, when they lived off campus, like they definitely were able to get like way less than what we were paying, that's for damn sure, but $400-$500 a month. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah. I can see that then.
About what rent was in Austin in 2009.
Yeah.
I had four roommates, but I paid about $550 a month.
Right. Right. And so I guess like that begs the question of was he trying to have a roommate at this point? Because it sounded like he was like trying to live by himself, but I don't think that would be possible. So I think he'd have a roommate.
Yeah. Yeah, although this lady says that this apartment is $425 a month plus utilities.
Yeah, and plus that's like a nice apartment. I think, I don't know. It looks nice. I guess we'd have to look and see if that was even possible. But, well, there is good news, sarcastically, that there's a Tudor mansion, $20,000 a month, and it's in Chicago. So he could also live there.
Yep. $20,000. I haven't laughed out loud at this part. guess. I know. 20,000. He's like, oh, so close.
So close. I also love that he puts up the closed sign to go look at apartments over this guy that's already sitting there. Mm-hmm. So like the fence thing is like over his lap, which is so funny.
It's just the common sense of mm-hmm. Andy just isn't quite there.
Nope, not at all. So then we've got the investment meeting starting, and Mark is so happy. There's a name card thing. He like does this quick smile to camera, which is so hilarious.
Yeah. He feels fancy, I think.
I know.
I don't think Mark gets to feel fancy very often. He's the very like average Joe type dude. So mm-hmm. when he gets like recognized, I think it's like a moment for him, you know?
Yeah, totally. And then he's asking, and Tom is asking if anybody has a pacemaker or a history of epilepsy, which Jerry does, but oh well. Well, it's fine. But I think this starts a long history of Tom's like light show presentations. So I'm really happy to see this first one.
How did he? He's like, I only have $4,000. Well, how much do you have now?
Right.
After this situation, and you hired these girls to be there. Like, dude, how much money did you put into this? And none of these people care about. Like maybe Donna, but like none of these people care about the flair that you're adding into this.
Right, exactly. I just love that he also is echoing the $1,000. Dollars, 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 dollars.
Yeah.
Thousand. It's so funny and so much. And I was just like, Tom, be quiet. Like, I know that you have to. But I also really love his chants to each individual person. And I know I'm breaking down each individual part of this, but it's just so funny because I had such a mix of like, I hate this, but it's also I love this. Like, it's such a weird thing because I was like, these are so funny.
I feel like that's Tom as a person.
Absolutely.
You're like, I hate this, but also I kind of like you.
Yeah, exactly. Oh my gosh. There is a deleted scene of Tom's slideshow. I think that might be the part that I recorded of John Ralphio's like dusting off the shoulders, how there were alts of that. I think I recorded it, like the video part of it. And so I'll post that on our stories. But there's also a deleted scene of just Tom's slideshow, like just like him not in there. But so the actual slideshow itself. So I'll post that as well.
That's awesome.
Oh my gosh. But so I did want to play for you briefly. There is so the one of the dancers who we will get to a little bit later, but I want to play this first one before we get to this later part of it. Is named Sarah Sanderson, and she's the one that had the history with Mark. And I thought that they had like a really cool I found her on Instagram, and she said that she would be willing to share with me how she got her audition and stuff. So
awesome.
I'm just gonna play that for you real fast.
Hello, how are you, Parks Pals Podcast? I'm Sarah Sanderson, who played Cindy in Woman of the Year on Parks and Recreation. That was such a fun show to work on. And my audition actually was a few months before that. And I can't even remember what the role was. I want to say I was a hooker. It was something. I remember it was on a street and I wore sexy clothes. I did not get it. But then I randomly got a call a few months later saying I had booked a role in the show. It was a recurring role of Cindy. And as you see in the episode, I obviously have some sort of backstory and history with Mark. Unfortunately, I was on hold for about 2 months after we filmed that, and they kept changing the shoot dates around. I was so excited. It was my first recurring role, just eager to see what the writers were writing and what the story between Cindy and Mark was. And then they finally released me after all that. And then I saw online that they had, Mark had left the show. So unfortunately, we never got to learn what happened with Cindy and Mark, and I never got to come back and play. But that was a really fun day shooting. I got a great workout because I had to just go dance the entire day.
That's awesome. That's
it. But I wanted to
hear. She has great abs.
Oh, she really does.
Yeah.
I think they both are really great and fit and look great.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, Chris, you know, like the whole side notes of being on hold. And I thought that you would really relate / understand what she went through.
It's the worst. Because again, when you talk to people who aren't in the industry, they're like, one, what the fuck does that mean? Mm-hmm. You're like, oh my God, I got first writer refusal. And they're like, what? Like, they're maybe going to put me on the show.
It's a potential. Like,
yeah.
But you're not actually on the show? Wait,
that's
what?
Nothing. Right? But yeah, they're like, there's all of them are these little W's. right? And you have to count them. Otherwise, it's so soul crushing. Mm-hmm. And so then when you finally watch the show and go, oh my God, I actually made it on there. Then it's finally like the really big capital W. But like, this is hilarious because she obviously booked the room. She obviously like really impressed these casting directors, and that's all you can do is just be consistent and be hireable.
But I know. I thought that was such a bummer, though, that she said that she was on hold. And like, it's one thing to be on hold, yes, but for the whole like story to be cut from your like thing.
Well, and that's what happens. All of this is so out of everyone's control. Mm-hmm. And it's why people who are actors, it can't be your entire life because you'll drive yourself bananas. Mm-hmm. Because like you could be amazing. You could do everything right. You could be the next Meryl Streep. And like if your storyline's cut.
It's not your fault.
Yeah.
They clearly wanted you at some point. Like, yeah. You know, you did what you could. Yeah. Yeah. But I'm glad that she was at least in for this episode because she was awesome. And it was super funny to see like her reaction and Mark's reaction. I thought it was great. So I have one more voice memo from her that I'll play a little bit later on. But now we're at where Leslie is kind of gathering all her awards, like certifying that she is worthy of this award. At first, I thought she was quitting because like she had that box of like the paper box or mailbox or whatever. And she was like gathering all her trophies and shit. And I was like, oh, my God, I don't remember her quitting. And then, yeah. That's not what happened. And then she asks Ron, like, here's all my awards. What do you have? And he says, well, I have the Dorothy Everytime Smurf Girl Trophy for Excellence in Female Stuff.
Very Ron of him.
And that's another thing they said in the commentary as well, that they were just like coming up with all these random ass names to for him to get it wrong, to just demean her even more.
My gosh.
Then, yeah, this is when he hands her the envelope saying that he recommended her to get the award instead, but he was just letting her dangle. And in case anyone was wondering, Nick Offerman did handwrite this letter in real life so that she was reading it in real time, and in case anyone was wondering. So that was really funny.
That's really sweet.
And I guess I should have said this at the beginning of the episode, but this was something that Mike Schur said on the commentary, that he had a professor in college who always like warned against this institutional gratification and like instant gratification, as well as like getting like notice from everywhere else instead of doing it for the reason of doing it. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And that's kind of where this all came from, is from his experience with the professor in school. So in case anyone was wondering why this story came to be, that's where it started, because of Mike Schur. So yeah,
I think that's a good lesson. It's really depressing, but it's a good lesson because there's so many jobs that people do and you never get thanked, you mm-hmm. never get appreciated, you never get noticed for the effort you're putting in. And so that's why it's so important to be doing something that fulfills you, mm-hmm. because if that sometimes is the only thing you're getting from it, and mm-hmm. as long as you're getting that, that's good. But like, you know, it can be.
I do think it's important to get notification or not notification. Maybe I guess that's the right word. But, you know, I do think it's important to get like noticed for every now and again. Obviously, that can't be your sole purpose, because like if you're not getting noticed for something, it does make it really hard to keep going. So I would say like those companies that give you like, you know, bonuses or, you know, notifications. I keep saying notifications, but you know what I mean? Like
notoriety.
Maybe. I just mean noticed, like just acknowledgement, you know, for the thing, all the things that you're doing, and maybe even some people putting lives on hold and things like that to do the job. I think it's so important, but it can't be everything.
Well, and that's why you got to do it for your own friends, too, because companies don't.
Right.
Workplaces don't. So when you see your friends get a win, mm-hmm. it's why like you freak out. And you're like, oh, my gosh, I can't believe this. I'm so excited for you. I'm so happy for you.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely.
100%. Yeah, because I agree. I think it's important. I just think there are companies or certain jobs where it's not an everyday occurrence. Mm-hmm. And like you have to be like not okay with that, but you have to be doing it not for the reason of the notoriety is kind mm-hmm. of.
Right. Yeah. And I think to your point, Chris, that's so true. I definitely I think we all kind of relate to that, where you're just like, if you see your friend get a win, then like we definitely are ones that,
we
you know,
all get a win.
Celebrate it. Yeah. Right?
There's room for all of us at this table, so why not hype them up?
Mm-hmm, yeah. So true. Yeah, so now we're at where Ron does love powerful women. He's talking about how he loves powerful women, and that I do feel like this is sage advice, so I think that that's good, because you don't want to drive yourself crazy. And then this is where we get to the Dorothy Everton Smythe spending 4 years in jail for wearing pants on a Sunday in Pawnee. So, but since we already discussed that, we can move on to Andy testing the acoustics in the bathroom. And he's singing his own song. This is what we talked about with Burley. Mm-hmm. I totally thought that this was a Dave Matthews Band song, and it's not. It's a Mouse Rat song.
Called Menace Ball.
Called Menace Ball. So funny.
Yeah. Good times. Good times. Mm-hmm.
This realtor lady that is showing the apartment is named Susan Isaacs. She was a part of the Sunday Groundlings group, which you guys have heard me talk a lot about. But just as a friendly reminder, Groundlings is an improv troupe class everything in L.A. Big deal. A lot of SNL people come out of there. But a Sunday group, Sunday shows is a mega huge deal. If you're on that, you are you're doing well. So she was in that. And it's just a big accomplishment in the improv world or comedy world, I guess, in general. So that's really awesome. But fun fact, she also is the one that shows Leslie the house that her and Ben are going to live in. And she's like, you don't get a deposit back, right? When Ben, like when she thinks that Ben isn't going to come back from Florida. And she's like, okay, I get it. But that's her. So thank I love you. That.
What's her name in the show?
Martha. I get it, yeah. Martha.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Martha. You may go.
Yes. I cannot wait for fucking Ben to get here. I know. It's been too long.
Ben and
long.
Chris, it's going to be great.
And she's also the one, she's just like the town's realtor, but another friendly reminder that she shows the new space for where JJ's is going to go, like when Grizzle is, you know, buying that part of the town. So she shows them. And she's like, honestly, I thought this was a prank call. Yeah, that's her too. So
that's a lot of consistency. That's mm-hmm. good.
That's Parks. Yeah. And she was also in Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, which I don't know if anyone remembers her, but she was in that. So I don't remember quite what she played, so I'm very sorry about that, but she was in that.
I'll have to look. I watched it at Thanksgiving. So.
I know, right? It's one of the holiday movies, huh?
Yeah.
But yeah, back to what you were saying, Maddie, they said that this was $4.25 a month plus utilities. And so maybe that'll be another fact check to see like what the census might have said back in 2009 for or 2010 or whatever. Yeah. And then I love how he's trying to sound like he knows what he's talking about, like per se advantages. And then he turns on the gas stove and doesn't know what the sound is. And he's like, you can just light a match to get that smell out. Mm-hmm. Oh, my God. How are you going to live by yourself or with anyone?
He can't. Yeah, no. Make me an offer is what he says.
Right. Well, it's $4.25 plus utilities. And then April says they could totally carpool. Ooh.
Well, she's putting it out there.
She putting that shit out there. You get it, girl. Mm-hmm.
I have something. Sorry. Mm-hmm. I'm way too into this.
Say it.
It's because we're trying to look at houses and houses just aren't affordable right now. Mm-mm. But anyway, so... In Indiana, in 2009, the average rent for a studio was about $475.
Okay.
I think this is a specific county.
Yeah.
$528 for a one-bedroom.
Okay.
$651 for a two-bedroom, $836 for a three-bedroom, and $911 for a four-bedroom.
Yeah. Okay,
just
that makes total sense.
Just to put it out there.
Well, great. Okay, so now I don't have to fact check that, but more importantly, we know that they did, probably. So, because that sounds accurate.
That's pretty accurate, yeah. Because it does look like it's a studio.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it looks pretty nice, though.
Yeah.
That's a lot of space, I feel.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
But anyway, love that. Okay, cool. There were a bunch of deleted scenes here, too. It was pretty nasty, actually, where he's trying, first of all, yeah, he's trying to negotiate the price, like he keeps going back and forth, but also he turns on the faucet and drinks the water out of the faucet. And you guys, this was a set and something that they said on the commentary. I'm glad they mentioned it because I was kind of wondering this, but so anyway, he's drinking out of the water, and they said that it was like, you know, since it was on set or location or whatever, like, you know, all the water from those sets, like, is from this, like, holding tank that has been there for, like, 800,000 years. And he said it was really gross and nasty. And I was like, I can't believe you drank that. I don't know if it was, it sounded like it was kind of just an improv. Like, I don't think it was in the script, but that just sounds hella nasty.
Yeah, it's disgusting.
But you can also, I mean, you can kind of see it in what they left in the show, but especially in the deleted scenes, I could totally see where Aubrey Plaza was like wanting to laugh and kind of like break down at his like dumb things that he was saying.
Oh, Andy.
But anyways, so now we're back in the conference room and for Tom's presentation, and Jerry says that if he spends more than $25, he has to ask his wife. Mm-hmm. I can totally understand like big purchases, like obviously, but $25. Oh, you precious little baby.
I'm hoping that's an exaggeration.
I hope it is too. But for Jerry, I don't think it is. I think it's completely accurate. I think he's like, if I'm at the grocery store and I spend over $50, baby, can I spend $50?
Yeah.
No. And Gail's just like, all you got was eggs, bacon, and toast, right?
Yeah. Call back. That's so good. It reminds me, though, of this conversation that my brother and I have every Christmas when they do all those car commercials with like, oh, I got my wife a car and I left it in the driveway and she's going to go. And Connor, he's always like, you tell me, what idiot husband is going out and buying his wife a car without letting her drive it first? And he's just putting it in the driveway. That's too big of a purchase. He's like, these commercials are so dumb. And I'm like, I kind of agree with you. Like, this is dumb.
I would be furious if I woke up on Christmas morning and was like, you fucking did what?
Yeah. Right. Well, especially if you're sharing finances, like, and you didn't talk about this with me. Hardcore. Excuse me?
Yeah. Well, and how do you not notice that? Where you're like, so the account doesn't have $40,000 in it?
Yeah.
What are we doing? Oh,
when did we get a loan from Chase Bank? I'm confused.
Oh my God. So dumb.
Oh gosh. Yeah.
I also love Tom's impression here of Mark about, I don't know, Anne, I guess we can get a movie on the pay-per-view. I think he actually kind of sounds like Mark.
He does a pretty good job, yeah.
I was really impressed. And then I was wondering, you already said this kind of, Maddie, about like how much did this set him back of like paying the dancers? Because this is a loss for him. But they said on the commentary that they had like a little backstory for him, that Tom helped the dancers get out of traffic tickets at some point in time. So they were strippers. And so now they're just repaying the favor.
I can see that.
So, yes, I think
that's him again serving for himself.
Yeah, absolutely. Think it makes total sense. I'm sure that he did that for a reason. He was like, I'm going to get something out of this. Yeah. And then, okay, so I'm going to play Sarah's second clip about a scene. It's actually really interesting. She was talking about the actual filming day, so I'll let her explain.
We did many takes. I can't tell you how many because I don't remember. So it was 11 years ago, which is crazy to think about. But what was so fun, the director of that episode, Jason, he had us do a take where we just improv'd. And he just let that camera roll. And I would give anything to somehow see this footage. But Jerry, who is played by Jim, he started having like a heart attack because I guess the lights and the music and all the commotion. So he starts improvising that he's having a heart attack and he, lays down. And so Aziz is like, oh no, do we have a doctor? Is anyone a nurse? My mom is a nurse in real life. So I yell out for whatever reason, my mom's a nurse. And Aziz says, well, then come over here. So I run over. He's like, what do we do? And obviously none of this is blocked out. And you can't hurt another actor, or if you haven't blocked out how you're going to push on their chest to save them with CPR. So I kind of did this little finger movement on his chest, which was ridiculous. And I just said, I feel like they do something like this. And so the second they finally yell cut, everyone starts laughing. Retta, who played Donna, just yells out, my mom's a nurse, because it was so ridiculous that in the moment that was my improv, but it was really funny and it was so fun. And I would love, love to somehow see this footage. But unfortunately, obviously that did not air. So never saw it. But the director came up to me after and said, good job. But that definitely, you know, filming on that show is playing with the big boys. They are on their A game. Even in rehearsals, everyone is so specific. They know their characters. It's like watching a master acting class in front of you. Everyone was great to work with. Mark, who plays Paul, was awesome. I got to chat with him a little bit after. I had told him I had just recently seen Lars in The Real Girl, and I loved him in that movie. And he was just very kind. So one thing I remember about that set, and again, this is 11 years ago, is they do not have plastic water bottles. They were very conscious of that, and they you'd get a cup, and there would be a water jug. And I feel like even to this day, I haven't worked on that many sets that did that. So I love that they did that. And I'll always remember it. But yeah, it was a great set. Everyone was so nice to work with. I was so upset that, you know, obviously never got to find out what happened with Cindy and Mark. But such a great experience, such great memories. And yeah, I never knew I had those go-go dance moves in me. But yeah, it was a fun time. But thank you for reaching out. If you ladies need anything else, please let me know.
Isn't that great?
That's awesome.
Wasn't that crazy though? I can't even imagine. I searched the deleted scenes. I told her I searched the deleted scenes for to see if the seizure or heart attack or whatever the hell was on there, and I couldn't find it. So they must have just taken it out completely, which is so sad.
I straight up for a minute thought she meant he actually was having a heart attack. Oh. I was like, what the? Oh no! I think she clarified, and I was like, okay.
Yeah, that would have been such a fun scene, I feel, but obviously everything for time. But yeah, I'm really appreciative that she told us that story, and especially when, also this is random, but when she was like saying that Aziz said, is anyone a doctor? It's like she did that like weird impression, which she did not mean to sound like him, I don't think, but it kind of did sound like him.
I think everybody just does it on accident, you know, like I know. When you're trying to say something the same way somebody else would.
Yeah, like a little high pitch moment. But but yeah, that was really awesome. I really loved that she was able to send us stuff. So thank you, Sarah, if you're listening. We'll definitely reach out if there's any other questions. Now we are at that Donna is very interested, but she wants to meet John Ralphio. I want to meet your boy, which I love. Not only her business acumen, but the way that she is so confident in what she is doing. So yes. I love that. Anything to say before we meet Elise Yartkin of the IOW?
I just have to say one of my favorite lines of this episode is when Mark says, I don't really want to get into this, but I don't beg for sex now.
Oh, yeah.
I just love the way that's put. And he's like whispering it.
Right.
It's great.
Right. Yeah. And I do love their Cindy and Mark's little moment, too, when Mark is just like pausing, like has that little bit of a hiccup, like, hi, Cindy. So fun. Yes. So now we are meeting Elise Yartkin, who is kind of in charge / leading the IOW. And she explains that the media / nobody really cares if you give this award to a woman. But if you give it to a mustachioed masculine man such as yourself, people will notice. And I love the way she said mustachioed. I love that line so much. And I love her performance so much. Her name in real life is Mary Beth Monroe. She's amazing. She was / I don't know if she's still, I'm sure she is. But I saw her a bunch of times at iOS when I was doing classes there / doing stuff there. She was on a house team. And she's so good. Like every time I saw her, she's just like nailed it. And she's been on a bunch of shows now, actually. I saw her, my mom still watches, you know, primetime TV because she's like one of the only people that does. But I saw her on a CBS show called Bob Hart's Abisola, or I think that's how you say her name. Abisola, Abishola. No, I don't know. It's on CBS. It's a great show, actually. It's a network show, and it's about this guy falling in love with his nurse, who is from an African country that I can't remember. Does this sound familiar to anyone?
I think my mom watches this. Yeah.
Yeah. But anyways, she is in that show, and she was also Mindy St. Clair in The Good Place. But like I said, she is a huge improviser and did a lot of Second City stuff as well as iOS. I do wonder if she knew Amy or Nick. I'm sure she did. I don't know like where she started as far as like New York or LA or Chicago, maybe. Maybe it was Chicago. I don't know. But anyways, so yeah, I was really pleased to do some more research on her because I always love when I see people that I either took classes from or just like really looked up to when I was doing improv shows or like taking classes and going to all their shows. So it's really cool to see her on the show. But I love how subtly, like her performance is really wonderful as far as like subtly intense, but also like kind of vicious. Like when Ron says he doesn't want it, like you're going to take it like a man. I loved it.
Yeah, it was very well done. I also have a huge problem with this, but like, it's fine.
Oh, yeah. I mean, like, that's, yeah, it's the whole layered of, you know, speaking truth to it a little bit, because I feel like that's very accurate of like, maybe if we give it to a man, people will actually fucking notice us, you know?
And that's the shitty thing is like, I get where she's coming from and I understand that that's the reality, right? I understand the premise, like, okay, we're not getting people watching this. We're not getting people paying attention to this. So if we put a man at the helm, I understand that they want recognition, but at the same time, it's like, but this is a woman's organization and you guys should have the morals to keep it to a woman. And eventually there's going to be something big enough that happens, like Harvest Fest.
Right. Or the thing could be, you know, because that's something that's a pillar of feminism, right? Is that, you know, you need men to support women as well. It's not just women that are shouting into the void. We need men. And just like with racism, we need white people to stand up. Because, you know what I mean? Yeah. I'm not saying that like a man should have won this award, but the other option could have been to have a man or like someone else, like, I don't know, support it or do some sort of like, what's the word? A sponsorship type situation or something like that.
I think there should be a separate award for men in the support of women. And I think Ron would be a really good candidate for that because he does support strong women in his life and he does celebrate, like, I mean, especially when he's with Diane, he does celebrate strong women. So I think like something along those lines is like, I don't know, but I get what you're saying. We do need like men recognized by the same, by that thing, but I think it was the wrong award.
But it also, I mean, back to that great commentary too of like, maybe you don't put so much faith in institutions. Maybe don't put all your eggs in that basket of like a feminist organization, obviously, is the pinnacle of what feminists should be.
Right.
That's true. That's a good point.
And how it has to be so cut and dry for Leslie, which I very much relate with. You know, it's not, that's not the end all. That's not the end of the world. You know what I mean? So, yeah, but we can all always see both sides. But I also really like, this is funny because they talked about how for a brief moment when Elisa's like, you know, being really stern with him, there was like kind of like there was apparently some takes where Ron was kind of turned on by Elise, which I think it would have been a great thing to see. That's because funny. Ron would totally be turned on by her, I feel. You know, very Tammy essence tracks. Going on.
I would have loved to see him in a red polo the day after the awards.
Like, me too. Fuck yeah. I hesitate to say this, but I think that even the haircut that Elise was given or hairdo that Elise was given was very like stern and very like no nonsense. I am saying what I'm saying and you're going to take it at the end. Just so funny. And then Leslie has that great talking head, which is so, she's just is so confused and flabbergasted because she's like, you know, the IOW is a bunch of sexist jerks and they need to get back in the kitchen and leave the real feminist work to feminists like Ron Swanson. And she's like, oh my God, what is happening? Great performance by Amy Poehler. I love that.
As always.
And so now Leslie wants Ron to accept it, but to go up there and say like how dumb awards really are. So Leslie's going to write the speech and the plan is for Ron to give this speech. And there is a deleted talking head of Ron saying, which I actually really, really am kind of sad they cut it because I really like this where he says, what I'm most happy about is that Leslie hasn't learned the real lesson here, which is that she should stop doing my work for me.
Which it's with the speech because he very quickly and easily delegates the speech writing to Leslie.
Yeah, exactly. So now we're at John Ralphio meeting Donna. And I just love how the more John Ralphio like speaks, Donna is narrowing her eyes even more. And she immediately is like, I'm out. Bounce. Yeah. Bounce.
He's
bounce,
a
bounce,
lot.
Bounce. All that lady say.
I just so love good. Him. I love him so much.
But good and for her. Mercedes, she's no fool. She is no fucking fool.
No, she's not. I love him with the either in your Mercedes or my pre-owned Acura Legend.
I just feel it's very telling every time I watch this that I'm just like, he's a dreamboat.
He's a dreamboat.
Going back to his earlier scene, right, when he turns to April and is like, want to go home with me? Each time I'm like, yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, please, let's
go. I do.
Oh my God.
You're adorable.
So bright days.
But I got it. You don't want to go to business with that guy. And I love her read too of I hate him.
Yeah, I hate that guy. She's looking like looking at Tom, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
He's in the same room.
Yeah.
Oh, it's so funny. I love it. But now we're at the IOW Awards. Alicia Artkin is giving this awards packet to Ron and Leslie, and then she cuts Leslie off saying, like, this area is for only award winners, and Leslie's like, get over yourself, Elise.
I love Leslie's hair, by the way.
Me too. I think it looks great.
Mm-hmm. I like when they change it up for her when she goes to these fancy things.
Mm-hmm. Me too. I do too. And I like her outfit as well. I think they both, mm-hmm. they both look great. Also, he has on a 3-piece suit. He has a vest underneath, which I was like, oh.
Fancy.
Okay. You taking this? Okay. Love a 3-piece suit. So then we cut back to Tom being at the shoe shine stand. He's all sad and depressed. And Andy gives him money to start his business. And it's such a weird moment because this is kind of like where you love and hate Tom. This little bit of a oh honey situation comes up with Andy where you're like, you're so dumb, but also you're so genuine and nice and I love you, mm-hmm. but also can you live somewhere?
Yeah, he just I don't think he thinks through how it's going to impact him, but at the same time I don't think he cares enough to go back on the choice, because when April mm-hmm. comes up to him after and is like, well, I thought it was going to be good for you to live on your own, he's like, yeah, but Tom really wanted this.
Yeah.
And I think it's really beautiful to see that, because he sees his life right now as a dream because Leslie stepped in for him. Mm-hmm. And I think he's almost paying it back in a way. Like, I could have been in a much worse position, but I'm not. And mm-hmm. so Tom wants to be in a better position. So he's just a really good friend. I think mm-hmm. Andy is as gullible as he is and as naive as he is, like, his heart's in the right place. 100%.
It's such an illustrative moment of who he is as a person. Like, to his very mm-hmm. core, he just wants his friends to be happy. And he doesn't really think about the future. You know, he's just like, what do we need right now to do and survive and live and be happy? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, which again is kind of, you know, where we're seeing more of him. But like he starts to think about the future, obviously, once April comes into the picture, which I think is really lovely to see that arc as mm-hmm. well. So,
yeah.
And then this is also, first of all, I love that they mentioned Tommy Fresh. Super fun. And a cologne moment that also comes back. I don't think he ever gets his cologne, but we do get the, Dennis Feinstein moment. And then this is the part that I thought was so funny, where he has the two lyrics that he has in his song, spread your wings and fly, and you deserve to be a champion. And I need that on my wall or some type of like affirmation poster. Love it.
It's so good.
Oh, my gosh. And then so we have the award. So now they're back at the IOW and they have a cutscene. And I believe I did actually record this part because it is with some ladies who got cut. And I'm going to play them for you.
I would just like to thank my mother for all of the support that she has given me. I promised myself I wouldn't cry.
It's the fourth woman who said that. I wish they would keep their promises.
Our speech is finished, and it's a doozy. I take down the IOW, Elise Yarkton, awards in general. Mr. Swanson, hi. I'm Carol Jasner from the IOW, and I just want to thank you so much for starting Camp Athena. My daughter goes every year, and it has totally changed her life.
Well, thank you, Carol. Actually, it was Leslie Knope here who really was the one who started it.
Mm-hmm. It really has made such a huge difference in her life. And I'm just thrilled that they chose you for this award.
And you all here in this room are like a family to me.
Wrap it up.
Wrap it up. No, I made this face when she says, when he says, actually, Leslie Knope was the one who did this. There, the like facial expression of that lady when she says mm-hmm, is like her eyes are rolling, and she totally like disregards Leslie, doesn't even look at her, is like, ugh, whatever. I was livid. I was like, how fucking dare you? Because the only thing I hate more than men hating women is women hating women.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Okay. So soapbox over, but. For now, we'll see. But anyways, the one who's giving the speech to accept this award saying, I promised myself I wouldn't cry, is named Cecilia Specht. She was actually on Star Trek Enterprise. I think it's so funny because there's so many like cast crossover with Star Trek, which mm-hmm. is hilarious. She didn't have any contact information, but I did find her Twitter And I tweeted at her. So we'll see. She is based in Atlanta. So that would be cool if I could, if she were to come here or vice versa. And then the other lady, who was great, as livid as I got during that performance, obviously that means that she did her job because I felt an emotion. Mm-hmm. And her name is Shauna Markey. Looks like she's done a few things, including Desperate Housewives, but she was wonderful. And yeah, I literally gasped when I saw that scene. So yeah, so thank you to those ladies for being there on that day and providing such a wonderful performance. And so now we're at Ron accepting this award. Anything else before I move on? Okay, so Ron's accepting this award, and I love this, as you said, Maddie, where he can't read the speech, though, like that Leslie wrote, that he delegated, because he stops himself, because he does understand, like, I feel like this is like a moment when you're seeing him think through, like, he does understand that awards aren't important, but this particular one is, you know what I mean, especially to Leslie. So it's really precious, and he still doesn't know the name of the thing, so he's just like calling Leslie up, tries to present it to her, and at least in the background is so funny with all her little facial expressions, and she's like, just somebody please take it.
Yeah, trying not to look pissed and stuff. And I think almost like his him not necessarily going against the speech but not going ahead with the speech makes more sense with that scene that you're talking about, because I feel like it's an extra cherry on top for him to be like, I'm being given the credit for this stuff that I didn't do. Mm-hmm. And I respect Leslie enough as a woman and as my employee that she gets the recognition where she deserves it. That's coming before his feeling about the awards, if that makes sense. And I think that scene sets it up really nicely. So I'm glad we get to kind of piece that in there.
Yeah.
That's a great point.
Totally. Totally. And I love that, like, once they're fighting and she decides to finally take it, she's like, how do I get this name changed? Can I talk to you about this? And someone yells, get off the stage. I want to know who did that.
I know. That's so good.
And I think my favorite line in this one is when Ron says, I still think awards are stupid, but they'd be less stupid if they went to the right people. I just think that sums up this whole entire episode.
Yeah. That's a great, great line. Yeah.
And then he proceeds to chug his whiskey. Good call.
Yes.
And so now we are back where April finds out that Andy gave all his money to Tom. He says Warren Buffet. Buffet.
Yeah. And it's like he's been corrected for how because he probably went to a buffet and he pronounced it Buffet. And somebody was like, listen, Andy, it's Buffet. Right. And so now he thinks everything that's spelled that way is Buffet.
Yeah. Absolutely. So that's so true. What a great point. I just love Aubrey Plaza's performance in this. Like, her eyes in this are so smitten and so like, okay, I thought I liked you before, but now that I see how much you care about your friends and like just everything else, I'm just head over heels, want to be with you. Okay. Baby, I'm sorry. I want that Buddha be me. I want me to be that boo. That's what she's feeling.
I love this arc for her too in general with Andy of like, oh, caring is cool. Because it's something that's still so prevalent too with millennials, I feel. Because I know people my age who still use like try hard as an insult, which is like what Leslie Knope embodies, right? And you see April so often just being like surrounded by her friends who hate everything, think trying is stupid, think caring about things is so stupid. You should be completely detached from everything and smug and smarmy about everything. And Andy's completely not that guy. So it's not only like she loves this person because he cares about so much stuff. It's just also like April's first into caring about things.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I love seeing that in shows when you see that the person that they're hanging out with is impacting their growth.
Yeah.
Positively.
Positively. I think it's wonderful. And so now we're on this newspaper clip of Ron accepting the award. Leslie has been cropped out of the picture. And it's funny because they did kind of talk about it in the commentary that like Nick Offerman's hand or Ron's hand isn't even really touching the award. It's kind of just like hovering over it, kind of like symbolically like, this isn't mine kind of thing, which is hilarious. But I paused it. And this news article, I know, Maddie, sometimes you do this too, but I paused it at this news article and I like read it. And oh my God, hats off to this props master or props crew, because my God, or art department or whoever did this, it was insane. First of all, they say Tom Morgadzo, who is the Indiana State Secretary of Education. That's what they're mentioning this guy. Tom Morgadzo is a producer on the show, just FYI.
That's cool.
He's also a producer on Brooklyn Nine-Nine and a bunch of the other shows.
Another so they sure put his thing name to do.
Exactly. Very sure thing to do. And that's so that was a fun Easter egg. But I have to read this to you, and it's so detail-oriented, you guys. So if it's like boring, I'm sorry, but I don't think it will be to this crowd. But so they say that Ron Swanson also oversees the Education of Homeless Children and Youth program, the Even Start Family Literacy Programs, the Early Reading First Programs, and the Early Childhood Educator Professional Development, and like a bunch of other like things that he's done before. And apparently it said that before he was director of parks, he was the director of research, assessment, and evaluation for the Pawnee Public School District, and served as an adjunct professor of education at the University of Indiana.
What?
What?
And I was like, gosh. I was like, I know that no one is reading this, and I'm sure that whoever came up with this was just having fun. But at the same time, it kind of makes sense, like that he was a teacher anyways. Maybe not like these like programs that he's like overseeing slash started. Mm-hmm. I don't know where that came from, because it doesn't seem like he cares about having government, you know, funded programs. But I could see him being an adjunct professor of like, you know, of education. And it sounds like education is like really important to him. I could see that.
Well, and if you put it on a timeline, right, mm-hmm. I can see him being interested in research and the betterment of people and going to libraries and then getting married to Tammy. And then she destroys everything that he loves about learning because she works at the library. And so then he's like, oh, fuck this. I'm working at the parks department now.
Intriguing. Okay. Yeah, I could see that. I'm down for that. But yeah, I was just like, oh my gosh, there was even more, but those were like the little things that I picked out, and they were all very, you know, obviously administrative sounding things, but it was just really interesting to me. So shout out to the props art department, whoever did that. It was incredible.
Yeah.
And then they put the award in the trash together, but then Leslie comes back and gets it, which I would have done too. I'm sorry. I just, it's a plaque, okay?
Yeah, why let it go? Why let it go to waste?
Right,
I would have done it too.
Yeah. So now I'm at the tag. If anyone else has anything to say before that, though, good.
Big okay. Kudos to Donna.
Oh my God,
she went for it.
So cool. Yeah. So this tag is when Tom is going to the club. He has his own booth roped off, but no one's with him. He's just by himself. He goes in like the fancy entrance kind of thing, and then he glances over and he sees Donna in her own little booth, and I just think it's hilarious because they said that everything that they say on the commentary I've like thought myself, which is so funny, and I love that they expand upon it, because this one they were like, what a nice group of friends that Donna has. They're so like diverse, they're aging in ranges, like you've got some Asian man, some like old white dude. Also, three shares. Okay.
Mm-hmm. How $30,000.
Is that $30,000 is what I was going to say? Mm-hmm. Okay.
So we are getting a glimpse into how much money she has. Mm-hmm. This is before we know she's a real estate agent on the side.
Correct. And keep in mind, too, that all the deleted scenes say that she's deeply in debt. Because there's so many deleted scenes where like they talk about her having a Mercedes, or like when they were moving Tom and she didn't want to put stuff in the back of her car because of the Mercedes and stuff. Like they had pretty much every episode so far anyway, where they talk about her Mercedes or her being rich, she's like looking, she has a talking head, a quick one where she's like, I'm deeply in debt, I'm in over my head kind of thing. But I'm glad they cut that, because I love the idea of Donna just being a gangster, you know?
And yeah, secretive about it. I like mm-hmm. it.
He's the one who's flush with cash.
Yeah! Mm-hmm. That's right, bitch! But yeah, it's just so funny. And then, yeah, so I also loved the assortment of things that she was having, like she had in there, like snacks and all the drinks and stuff. She wasn't just like, she's not playing around. You know what I mean? So
she's a baller.
Yeah, she's a baller and I love her. But yeah, so that was Woman of the Year. So exciting. Oh my gosh. Well, if you guys have other questions or things that we need to like look into, please let me know. I'm still going to ask Andy Milder what episode he was in, because that is driving me a little bit crazy. But apart from that, I think we covered it. I'm glad that we looked up the prices of an Indiana apartment.
Sorry, I was so stuck. I was like,
no, I don't blame you. Yeah.
No, it helps further color the world. We understand the mechanics better. Mm-hmm.
Well, and that they're obviously doing so much research. Mm-hmm. Like, it's amazing. Because there's no way that the rent in LA was close to that.
Oh, yeah. No way. LA doesn't count. Yeah, they were definitely doing the Indiana one. Oh, my God. But yeah, okay. Well, Chris, can you also tell people where to find you? And I'll also post you guys or your videos and things like that in the show notes, too.
Yeah. Thank you so much. You can watch me Monday through Friday on the John Campia Show, being a pop culture commentator. We talk about movies and TV and everything. Or you can follow me on Instagram or Twitter at Actor Chris Carr.
Yay! So exciting. I'm so glad that you're back to doing that and that you're having a good time.
I love it. It's so fun.
And you're also teaching. So if anyone wants some voiceover, like badass goodness, get into her DMs or emails or just what.
You can go to the studio website, eebstudios.com, and you can sign up there.
Great. Yes, that was going to be my next question. EEB Studios. Yes. Which I will post all of those things as well. But yeah, so next week we have the possum.
This is not the episode I'm thinking of. Never mind.
Oh, what were you going to say?
Because I get possums and the park rangers mixed up, because Andy Samberg is like my favorite person on the entire planet, and I'm so excited for that episode.
I know. Well, it's close. Yeah, it's close. We're getting there. It'll be I think that's the next one. After the possum, I think.
Okay.
But anyway, yeah. So we're getting there. We're getting there. And I do have to. I have a confession that I had never really watched Brooklyn Nine-Nine, because I don't know why. Because it came out like at a time when I would have watched it. I don't know what the hell I was doing.
It's been out a while.
Yeah. So, and it just ended. So so it's on Peacock, you know, same thing as you're watching Parks. So I started that and, it's amazing.
So good, right?
Oh, I was going to, never mind. I was going to say something where I could see the captain playing this character in a book that I'm reading, but you guys aren't fantasy fans yet. Cause I've been reading all the A Court of Thorns and Roses and, Tower of Glass and all these like amazing fantasy books.
Ooh.
And they're so amazing. So and like my friends and I have like a group text, and we're always like, who could you see playing this character, and we're always like having fun doing our like dream cast, which is really funny. Which I hope to be a part of one day. We'll see. So anyways, but yeah, okay, well, is there anything else that you guys have left to say? You good?
No. We'll see you next week for the possum.
Yay! Well, thank you, Chris, for coming back. We appreciate you so much, and we'll have you back again.
Thanks so much, y'all. This is always so fun. I appreciate you.
Yay! Okay, bye, you guys. Have a great week, weekend, whenever you're listening to this, and we will see you next time.
There's a park and some pals, and there's also therapy, too.